Okay, good morning. So we're at the end of Sefer Shoftim Perek Aleph, where we have been discussing last week the further conquest of Eretz Yisrael. And within that discussion, we're focusing on several of the minor victories that the Jewish people had. We began the Perek by discussing the victories of Yehuda and Shimon. Yehuda took Shimon along for the ride, so to speak, in terms of conquering extra parts of Eretz Yisrael that were not yet conquered. And then other Shvatim got involved, namely Menashe and Ephraim get involved. And that's where we analyzed this very enigmatic passage in the Navi, where they are trying to find the city, couldn't find the city, which is very strange. Okay, maybe they didn't have a map, they didn't have ways, they couldn't identify the city. But the difficulty was that they were trying to find the city because they couldn't find the entrance to that city. And that was the city of Luz. Eventually, they find a man. He helps them out. He gives them, he lets them know what the place is. They move him to somewhere else. They find the entrance, they overtake the city, and they don't kill anybody in the city. They relocate them to a different place. That place then is called Luz. And that place, whatever this place of Luz is, was impenetrable. What does that mean, is impenetrable? Chazal tell us, right? The Navi says, he Luz ad hayom hazeh. This is the Luz that we know today. And we know, he Shema ad hayom hazeh, that this is something that comes up pretty often in the Tanakh, that this is Shechem ad hayom hazeh, this is blank ad hayom hazeh. Here it means something a little bit more. It doesn't just mean that this is the same name, same city. What it means is that when Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, was destroying the Jewish people and destroying Eretz Israel, he never was able to destroy the city. When Sanherib went ahead and took nations and religions and cultures and purposefully mixed them together to create melting pots throughout his reign of terror, the city of Luz was never involved in that. They were never felt the wrath of Sanherib, were never mevalbel, says the Gemara. So we were looking into this city and discussing the significance and power of the city, and we came across several other very peculiar lines in Chazal. We noted and mentioned how the Gemara writes that the greatness of the city of Luz was its ability to do the mitzvah of Leviya. That one of the mitzvos of Achnasas Orchim is not just to feed and to take care of the guests in your home, but part of the mitzvah is also to walk them out, escort them out. And it's not just to walk them to the door. Many understand that it's to walk them outside your door, give them food, make sure they know how to get to the next place that they're going to. Maybe bizman hazeh, that means you type it into Waze. Maybe that means you ensure that they have enough gas. Maybe it means you give them a little bit of tzeid l'derech. You give them some snacks and some water to make sure that everything is good. And they excelled in this mitzvah. So Chazal, in a certain level, sometimes put these two things together. That number one, they excelled in this mitzvah of Leviya. Secondly, the Gemara says that the Malach HaMaves was never Sholepo. That the Malach HaMaves never had the ability to take control of the city. And if you lived in the city, you lived forever. Wow. Right? So it happens to be that in Googling about the city of Luz, this city of Luz probably started this concept that we have, the Fountain of Youth, which is something that I'm sure there are a lot of like TV shows and movies and films that were made about the city of all, all these fantasies and these concepts that, you know, are part of mystical lore, and now part of common, you know, culture. Some argue that they started from this city of Luz, that they have some, you know, initially with the, that they started with this city. There's another example of this that I'm not going to get into, you know, a lot of details now, but there is a fascinating passage in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Parakuf Ches, where Shaul HaMelech is on his, he's going to die in the Tuprakim from then. He meets a witch, a woman, a Balas Ov, which is a woman who could speak to the dead. It's not clear whether that's really true or not, but the Torah tells us in Barshi Kedoshim that we're not allowed to be a Balas Ov Yidoni, which is using some type of bone to speak to the dead. But Shaul speaks to the dead. He speaks to Shmuel through this, in which Shmuel says, when you go to war tomorrow, you and your children are going to die in this war. It's exactly what happens. The woman is from a place in Eretz Yisrael called Ein Dor. Ayin Yud Nun Dalid Aleph Resh. Ein Dor. I remember teaching this story in my seventh grade Yeshivat Noam class. At this point, probably 7 or 8 years ago, 8 years ago, one of my students said to me, "What?" He could not believe what I was saying. The Balas Ov of Ein Dor, this boy and his friend, Ezra and Max, I remember. Don't catch me on their last names. I don't remember those. They told me they're very big into comic books. And not only that, they're just into like reading and researching these topics and mythical creatures and things and beings. And he said one big thing within that world is a woman called the Witch of Endor, E-N-D-O-R. And they did their own research, and it's clearly traced, this whole thing is traced to the Navi. It comes from whoever made this up. You know, not the Navi, but made up that part of it, this extension of it. It came straight from that story in Tanakh. And some argue that this story about Luz also emanates, like these, you know, people that live there, it comes from this Chazal about this. So we wanted to explore this more. We did note that there was a very big challenge in one of the Midrashim that we learned, where one of the Midrashim says that Zakenim, the youngers of the people that live there, the citizens of the city, would push the Zakenim out when they got too old. And that is that's euthanasia, Dr. Kevorkian, you know, that's something that, you know, has...
Joel was actually punished for that purpose.
Shaul was punished. Yeah, it was a very bad thing. You're chayiv misa. I should be very clear. It's a consequence of this death penalty for invoking and being a balas ov. It's a very serious.
You find a lot of people today who still believe in those type of psychiatric. What I don't know what they call them. You see them lined up on Fifth Avenue or Park Avenue, even that they read your palms and they do all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So some, it's probably like related. Yeah. That's great. Sorry, Lab, you'll continue when you unmute. We'll continue, okay? Yeah, Barry Lab is correct. Shaul was taken to task for doing just that. And there are people that believe in this today. The Rambam writes famously about that episode is that it really didn't happen. This woman had the ability to conjure up images or to fake it in a certain way that people felt that they're actually speaking to the dead, but it wasn't really true at all. Others disagree that they believe there is this power and magic out there. So this, I'm quoting this just to highlight that sometimes there are cultural or, you know, references or literary references that we think are made. No, they come, some of these are even rooted in the Torah itself. And this is the story of Luz. So what gave Luz its power? And what does Luz, what I want to discuss today is what does Luz represent for us? Why is this significant? Why do we care about Luz? So Rav Dessler of Eliyahu Eliezer Dessler writes something really, really powerful. He writes in a short little essay, Rav Dessler, he writes that why was Luz untouched, unscathed in history? Why is it that people can live there forever? What does it represent? So he writes that what it represents is this mitzvah of chesed that they did. They did a mitzvah of chesed. Their mitzvah of chesed that they excelled in was the mitzvah of Leviyah. And that mitzvah of chesed is able to protect them through everything. At a certain point, remember the story of Shlomo HaMelech, where these two people came to Shlomo and the Malach HaMaves didn't want to kill them. So Shlomo sent them to, and they died at the feet of the entrance of Luz, and the Malach HaMaves tricked them. Why was Shlomo sending them to that place? Apparently, because chesed is something that's going to, these people were excelled in Torah, they excelled in mitzvos. One thing that we can never get enough of is chesed. He said the chesed is protects you. And that's something that stays with you even into the grave and protects somebody tremendously. So that's where Rav Dessler writes is the protective element of this city is the mitzvah of chesed. In fact, Avram Avinu planted a tree. What was that tree called? What did Avram plant? What was the tree that Avram planted? We don't know it as a tree because we know the Rashi on this already. Or Avram planted a tree, Vayita Eshel. Avram planted a tree called an Eshel tree, right? So Rashi tells us it wasn't really a tree. It wasn't a tree. It represented three things that Avram did. An Eshel is Aleph Shin Lamed. It is Achila, Shtia, and Rashi says, what's the Lamed? Lina. That Avraham and Sarah gave people a place to eat, to drink, and to sleep. The Vilna Gaon says that we got it wrong, that Rashi didn't really write initially Lina. What did Rashi really write? Avraham and Sarah excelled in Achila, Shtia, the Lamed is Levia. That the paradigms of Chesed, Avram and Sarah, Avram Vinu and Sarah Imenu, they were paradigms in Chesed, and they excelled in Levia, of walking people out of our doors, of giving people that chizuk and that strength. In fact, some write that api chasidus, the chasidim always try to put a positive spin on everything. The Torah says, vehi pishalach paro es ha'am, that when Paro sent the nation out, sent the Jewish people out, what did Paro do? He chased after them. Api chasidus, maybe derech, a little bit of a snide remark, is that Paro felt he didn't walk the Jewish people out. So he chased after them. And that's part of put a positive spin on Paro, even on Paro, right? That he needed to do Levia, escorting the Jewish people outside of his country. Perhaps there too. So now let's take this one step further. So I came across a sefer called Mesilos Nevi'im by Rabbi Eisenberger, contemporary rabbi, who has Sfarim on the Nevi'im. And he writes here that we have to understand Luz on three levels. Anything in the world, anything, I guess, within Torah, really in the world, we can understand in three levels. That is in the world of Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. For example, we have a concept called Kedusha. So Kedusha, there's something that's the holiest in the world, Olam, something that's holiest in the year, and holiest in the Nefesh, in the Jew, right? So Olam means, what's the holiest place in the world? At Yushalayim, that's the Makom of the Kodesh Kedushin, Makom of the Beis HaMikdash. Shana, what's the holiest day of the year? Yom Kippur. What is Nefesh? Who's the holy, right? All of our souls are holy. Maybe there's so they say that the Kohen Gadol in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was the highest of Olam, Shana, and Nefesh, was somebody that had all three of those, as the highest, the holiest Jew, on the holiest day, in the holiest place. So now he says that Luz represents something that is unscathed, that is perfect, that stays pristine throughout time. That's what he says Luz represents for us. Kamoshi Yesh Mitzios Be'olam Shel Ha'ir Luz. Just like there is a place in the world called Luz, there's also a place in our souls called Luz. Kach Omnam Gilu Lanu Chachamenu HaKadoshim Ve'etzem Yesh B'Shidra Shel Adam U'Shmo Luz. There's part of us that's called Luz. The Gemara writes, I don't remember if I quoted this last week. The Gemara writes, from where does Tchias HaMesim happen? Our bodies, after 120, decay under the ground. So how do our bodies, how are they built up again after Tchias HaMesim? The Gemara says, wild, in light of what we're learning, that there's a bone in our body, it's in the back of our neck and the top of our spine, and it's called the Luz bone. The Luz bone. And from the, and that bone does not decay. That bone does not rot. It stays perfect. And from there, when it's time for Tchias HaMesim, the entire body is recreated, is reformed and refashioned from that bone. It's all built on that bone called the Luz bone. How do we know this? It's right here in the Midrash. Adrianus, Sachik Atzamos Shal as Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Adrianus was probably some non-Jew who was known as the bone crusher, the bone breaker. Sounds like some type of wrestler's name. He says, he asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, where does HaKadosh Baruch Hu find the spark to recreate man? And he says, from the Luz in the Shidra, from the Luz bone, he did this. So this bone crusher, Adrianus, took this bone, the Luz bone of a cadaver, and he tried to crush this. And he put it all through all of his tools and he tested it and it didn't work. It couldn't be crushed. It couldn't be penetrated. There's something about this. So he writes here that this bone is very, very chashuv. What's amazing is that the Gemara tells us that you want to be part of Tchias HaMesim. The Gemara says this. Do you want to be part of Tchias HaMesim? The answer is yes. Yeah. Okay. What do you need to do? The Gemara says, eat Malava Malka. What? Give tzedakah. Be nice. Learn Torah. No. Eat a Malava Malka. Why? Eating the Malava Malka nourishes the Luz bone. It makes the bone, that bone, even stronger and gives person greater ability to come back in Tchias HaMesim. What does that mean? Doesn't everybody come at Tchias HaMesim? Okay, those are very good questions. But you see here something powerful about this bone. The Kabbalists, the Mekubalim here, explain that what is unique about this bone. They say that when Adam and Chava ate from the Eitz Hadas, their entire body was affected. And we know with biology these days, how we understand how blood flows throughout the body and affects all different parts, and from the brain and the heart, etc. Everything flows and everything's really connected one to the other. He says that every single part of the body was benefited from eating from the Eitz Hadas, from this tree, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, except for this bone. This bone, the reason why it stays forever and it can't be crushed, it can't be broken, was because it comes from a place that was never part of chait, was never part of sin. It's untainted historically. It's untainted in Chazal, untainted from Avera. Therefore, it stays forever. Wow. Fascinating. And that's why it's connected to the Sudas of the Malava Malka. What does a Malava Malka represent? Okay, I'm not going to go around the Zoom room and raise your hand. Do you eat a Malava Malka every Motzei Shabbos? What do you eat from the Malava Malka? Do you wash? Do you not wash? Do you have candles? But what does a Malava Malka do? What are we saying? Right? So what are we saying? We're saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu, we just experienced a very holy time. We had 24 hours of Me'ein Olam Haba. We experienced a Shabbos. Every Shabbos is so special. I found that Shabbos, even during Corona, were very, very special. It was a time that of calm amongst the storm of the week, you know, not knowing what's going to be and what's going to happen. And then you had Shabbos, which calms things down. Shabbos is over. What are you saying to a Kadosh Baruch Hu when you sit down for another meal? You're saying, I don't want to leave. I want this existence. I want to stay here. I want to experience the Shabbos. I want Shabbos to come into the week. I want the chol to be a little bit more kodesh, to be a little bit more holy. And that's bringing Shabbos into the week by beginning Shabbos with our Malava Malka. That's what Malava Malka is about. It's really the job of a Jew. The job of a Jew is to bring the kodesh into the chol, is to bring the holy into the mundane, the holy into the secular. That's our ability. And that's what, when we do that, we create nitzchias, we create eternality, we create this ability to connect with something that is infinite. That's why that bone is nourished from that meal, because that bone represents infinity. And Reisenberger continues. Sorry, Pam. Sorry, Masaryk, go ahead. You have a question?
Wait, I'm trying to unmute.
You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay. I just was curious about that bone when it's a body is burned. Is that bone still, I don't know, what happens to the bone?
Okay, it's Parshas Vayechi. Parshas Vayechi, we have to, I'm going to send that a reminder, hopefully, an email about different end-of-life issues that we all have to just have constant reminders about, halachic living wills, things like that, buy cemetery plots if you don't plots, etc. Cremation is a very, very serious violation. Very, very severe violation. I don't know. I can't tell you. I think some of this is meant to be allegoric in nature. We can't judge people who don't know better, but we have to spend as much money as possible as a Jewish community to expend whatever services and needs we have within our own communities to ensure that no Jew gets cremated. It's a very, very serious and severe violation. Does it literally get crushed? Probably, but figuratively, this message is very, very important. So he continues by saying that there's also something in the world that is that never leaves. We don't know where the city of Luz is. We don't know where the city is, but there's a place where the Kedusha never leaves. The Gemara tells us that the Kotel that was built by Shlomo Mel, the Kotel Ma'aravi, Mibinyan Shlomo Sha'omid La'olam, that lasts forever. Never, the Kedusha, the Shechina, never left that wall. The Medrash and Shir Shirim tells us that there's no hefsed, there's no loss. Maybe the wall itself rots and decays, maybe parts of it have fallen off. I think last year before Shavuos, not this past Shavuos, two Shavuos ago, a wall from the Kotel fell down. There's a big discussion what to do with that rock. Is that Kadosh? Is that Kadosh? It needs to be buried in the ground. Nonetheless, the Gemara tells us that the Shechina was never Zaza, never left the Kotel HaMaravi. It always was in there, always imbued with the Kedusha. It is this concept of Luz, this concept where there are certain things in our life, in the world itself, where the Kedusha stays intact, where the thing itself stays pristine and stays perfect. There are certain things like this in the world itself. And he says another thing or person who represents this in a person, in a form, and that is Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi is somebody that is always there, right? It always is around, you know? He even came this year to our Pesach Seders. Nobody else came. Eliyahu, he was there. He represents this continuity of Klal Yisrael, this pristineness, and something that can never be touched and never be affected by the outside and by externality. That's what Luz, Rabbi Eisenberger, and Mesilas Nevi'im says really, really represents this part of ourselves, this neshama that we all have that is never touched. That's why we have a concept called a pintel yid. You have a Jew that might be so far off and so far fallen, so, you know, go so far up, they never lose their connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. There are parts of this world that never lose their connection to Ribono Shel Olam. And that's what Luz on a certain level represents. We're going to continue now. We'll wrap up the Perek. The Perek really wraps up by telling us that there were a lot of other tribes, a lot of other Shvatim, that failed, as opposed to Yehuda Shimon and parts of Menashe and Ephraim and Bnei Keni, who helped out also. There are other tribes that were not helpful in this. And they, V'lo Horish Menashe as Beis She'an. Menashe did not dispose of the inhabitants of the city of Beis She'an. Beis She'an today, I don't know what's in Beis She'an today. It's a major, major tourist attraction in the city of Beis She'an. You know, maybe you brought your grandchildren there at one point. Beis She'an has a kangaroo zoo in Beis She'an. We'll see it later on in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Actually, the story, Shaul eventually dies. We learned about Shmuel Aleph.
Rabbi,
Shaul's body, one second, Rabbi Lapp. Shaul's body is taken by the Plishtim and is hung on a wall in Beit She'an for all to see in a very degrading and embarrassing manner to the monarch of the Jewish people. Yes, Rabbi Lapp.
Going back to Trias HaMesim, every morning we say the kind of Shemesh on the Sata Bita Hori Ad Barosi Sata. Then we talk about the Shomer coming back and that being regenerated into you might call Trias HaMesim.
Yeah.
Is it the goof or is it the Shomer?
And well, the Shomer lives on forever. Rabbi Lapp. Our neshamas live on forever. So those are pristine.
Good. So it's the goof. Stage of the goof? Is it going to be when he's 60 years old, 50 years old? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. What? How old is this person when they come back?
Yes.
You get to choose. Exactly. I was better looking. I had some more hair in my 20s. I don't know. That's a good question. There are some chazals that do talk about this. But this is something I could say I am not an expert in. I don't know. I'm hoping to see. I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
A contribution for my 6-year-old granddaughter.
Okay.
She wants to know what happens to Trias HaMesim with the person who no longer has a heart. My donor.
They get a heart. You know, it's fascinating, Jay, in the whole discussion.
That came from my 6-year-old.
If a Kadosh Baruch Hu can bring us back to life, a Kadosh Baruch Hu can give a person a heart.
Amen.
In the whole discussion about organ donation, which is a very, very serious and halachic topic, nobody's concerned. The poskim don't talk about, what's going to happen in Trias HaMesim with their heart. Nobody's concerned about that. They say, okay, the person's going to get that back. The question is whether it's appropriate or not appropriate to donate or what stage. But that's not part of it, which is very, very interesting.
Yep.
So, and that's the end of the parak. The parak ends with a very common theme, which we're going to see throughout, is that it discusses every tribe. And this really gets back to what we mentioned about a month ago in the introduction here, is that where does Shoftim begin? With no leadership. Every tribe and every person is on their own, making their own decisions based on their own, you know, feelings and thoughts. And that's not where the Jewish people, that's not where the world should be at this point. That's where we are. Ephraim lo horish, Zevulun lo horish. People decide, should we, shouldn't we? But there's no centralized leadership. There's not one person or one body governing the Jewish people. And, you know, not here for, you know, people should be, autonomy is not good. It has to be a combination of both. But this, at this point, is not healthy. Naftali lo horish Joshua Beit Shemesh. They leave people there that are not supposed to be there. They leave, and again, that's going to end up tripping us up in the future. And that's where we alachsu, and we end by saying that the Emorim put tremendous amount of pressure on the Shevet of Dan. Nobody's there to help them. They're all on their own. And we're going to see how this brings them to the Perek Beis. Perek Gimel is where we really see the stories of the Shoftim that we really are familiar with, Ehud ben Gera and Devorah and Shimshon and Yiftach and Gidon, that really begins in the third chapter. But the first two prakim really set us up for that stage, really frames it and contextualizes the rest of the Perek. So Be'ezras Hashem, next week we will continue with Perek Beis. Wish everybody a great day and a good week. Take care.